Hello and welcome to the Warp Podcast. My name's David Tiltman and today we are talking about the future of sports media. Now, this is a really hot topic as we saw a couple of weeks ago with the Super Bowl in the US. Live sport delivers mass audiences like nothing else and that's why advertisers love it. But as consumption fragments across platforms and devices, those traditional reach benefits from sports are coming under threat. Now, our Warp Media Service has just published a new global ad trends report on sports media in the era of fragmentation. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined by the two authors, Alex Brownsall and Celeste Wang, to discuss the key insights. Now, this is a 3 in 15 podcast, so we have three big themes from that report in 15-ish minutes. Celeste, look, there's a lot to unpack in this report. And before we get into those three themes, could you just clarify what we're talking about when we refer to sports media?
Yeah, sure. It's broad. We're referring to all the places where sports content is broadcast and streamed. Traditionally, that has been dominated by linear TV, but video on demand apps are beginning to make their presence felt. And we've also looked at the social and digital platforms where a lot of the conversations about sports and athletes are taking place.
So we've got the sort of sports rights, the official broadcasters of live sports coverage, but then we've got this increasing sort of universe of sports content that surrounds those rights, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
Great, thanks. Well, look, let's get straight into the first of our topics. So, Alex, over to you. What is the first thing you want to draw from this report?
Thanks, David. So, yeah, the first thing is that evolving relationship between TV media, in the broader sense of TV, and sport that you've alluded to in your introductions, and, of course, what this all means for brands. So, major live sports events are, as we've discussed previously, it's the last real bastion of mass concurrent viewing. You know, the Super Bowl only just a couple of weeks ago had a viewing audience of nearly 124 million viewers in the US. Now, it's the largest audience for a single network telecast in US history. It's the second most watched US broadcast ever behind the moon landings, for goodness sake. And these are incredible figures. And
only they are incredible figures. I mean, you just don't see numbers like that much anymore, do you?
No, it's almost as everything else has fallen away. You know, the days of Dallas or Dynasty or MASH or whatever that would sort of maybe once upon a time have delivered those sort of 100 million plus audiences in the US. It's gone. It's only really sport left that can deliver them. And the NFL actually in particular. So that the NFL accounted for 93 out of the top 100 most watched US broadcasts last year.
Sport is still this massive driver of reach. It's and so much of that is due to the live nature of it, the need to see it as it unfolds. But we write about how some of this is changing. So what exactly is changing in this world?
I think a lot of things are changing, but I think one of the big issues is that the long-standing model that we've seen where live rights have been aggregated at significant cost by pay TV, by cable TV, is being disrupted. Global spend on sports rights is soaring. I mean, it's forecast to reach $62 billion this year, according to Sports Business. That's up nearly 20% on the levels we saw before COVID. And the reality is that kind of inflation is unsustainable for TV companies. And it is primarily TV companies we're talking about when they are having to face up to existential issues like cord cutting, like plateauing or even declining ad revenue.
So this is really interesting, isn't it? Because you've got the TV companies for whom sport is the last bastion of mass reach, but they simply can't afford to keep up with the cost of sports rights because there's so much other competition in the market. And let's talk a little bit about that. Where is the incremental revenue coming from for rights holders? How are they able to drive these numbers up so much?
Well, one of the ways that they are doing it is by, rather than expecting a single broadcast to sort of to stump up ever increasing sums necessarily, some of them are breaking up their assets into smaller packages. And to dwell on the NFL, again, it's a really good example of this. Any fan that wants to watch all live games within a particular season is going to have to dig deep into their pocket. So they're going to need to have access to ESPN and NBC through cable. They're going to have to pay for multiple streaming apps in the form of Amazon Prime, Peacock, YouTube TV, and then on top of that, probably the NFL Plus mobile app as well.
So how does that all then affect brand advertisers and how they use sports media?
The first thing is it means more complexity in the media plan. It means budgets being split across a greater number of media owners and fewer sort of less concentration on particular sports moments. And any investment is going to reach a smaller slice of the target audience. Now, media owners know this. And actually, as it happens, the day we happen to launch this particular Global Ad Trends report, three of the biggest players in the US sports media industry, so ESPN, Fox, and Warner Brothers Discovery, announced a new sports streaming service that they're going to be pooling their respective sports rights into. Now, we don't know too much about this platform yet, only that it'll launch later this year, and it's going to include games from properties, you know, across the NFL, NBA, college sports, golf, tennis, the FIFA World Cup. So a really, really strong breadth of assets. And if it can gain traction, this is certainly going to appeal to brands that want to maintain those reach benefits from sports.
And this is really interesting, isn't it? Because this is basically the ESPN, Fox, Warner Brothers, Discovery. I mean, these are competitors. But they're effectively recognizing that they're not benefiting by competing with each other. They've got bigger competition outside of the sort of traditional broadcast fold that they need to sort of combine forces in order to fight. That's what's happening here.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And obviously, we'll come on to the trends among younger audiences in particular. But one of the things we've seen with the streaming, the SVOD boom is perhaps kind of settled down now. And there isn't room for everybody in the market. Sports assets are absolutely the jewel in the crown for TV companies. So they're going to be trying to find new ways to monetize that, as particularly as obviously as younger audiences migrate from linear and broadcast television into the SVOD and BVOD arena.
We'll come on to that in a bit more in a moment. But before we get there, I want to touch on the impact on the ad market in general. You know, we've often seen in the past this thing called the quadrennial effect, where every 4 years, I mean, it's partly the presidential election, but it's also the in the US, but it's also the Olympics, the European Football Championships. You see this sort of spike in advertising spend once every 4 years. How are all the things we're talking about starting to affect those sorts of trends that have been quite longstanding?
We're not seeing the same level of impact from sport on advertising investment as we used to be frank. I think that the quadrennial effect is much more focused around the impact of the US election in particular now, a presidential election. So our analysis, for instance, at Walk Media, it found a weakening relationship between international men's football competitions. So we've got Euro 2024 coming this summer, for instance, and linear TV ad spend. So in the UK in particular. Now, there will be some incremental spend. IAB Europe has forecast 250 million euros in incremental spend across the continent around Euro 2024, and an extra $2 billion being spent from US brands around the Olympics. But as Kate Scott-Dawkins, the president of GroupM's business intelligence unit, pointed out to us fairly recently, the impact is going to be diminished by that fragmentation in consumption.
I do think the impact on linear TV and viewership, where sports is already accounting for a much higher percentage of time. So if we look at adults 18 to 49, in 2018, they were spending 15% of their linear national TV time on sports. In 2022, that was up to 21%. So it's a big increase in those 4 years. So sports is already occupying more of that time. But if we look at the percentage moving over to streaming, some of those subscribers, and you know, there'll be intricacies around what's ad supported and what's not. Some of those will be premium subscribers without ads. So you have to take all that into account as you're looking at the total impact on what it's going to see. But I think against the time zone, certainly the cord cutting element has to be included in that analysis.
Okay, let's move on to our second topic from the report then. So Celeste, over to you. What have you got?
Thanks, David. One of the things we observed in our research is that younger generations in particular are consuming sports content on social medias or social platforms. And an Emperor analysis found that 93% of 18 to 24s engage with sports on social media. That's quite a high percentage. And sports highlights are one of the fastest growing genre of social content among US consumers. That's according to data from GWI.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen this myself with my own son who watches Premier League footage on social platforms all the blinking time. Do we know why this is happening?
So I can totally relate to that. I do the same. So in the report, in the Global Ad Trends, one aspect we address is certainly the spending power. Younger sports fans may not be able to afford the cost of pay TV and multiple streaming services required to watch their favorite teams or athletes live. So they enjoy being able to watch highlights on social apps or platforms. I personally watch a lot of highlights on YouTube. But there are also other factors. For example, the importance of community to smaller and niche sports or traditionally underinvested sports, as well as the rising importance of athletes as a focal point for fandom.
Can you explain that in a little bit more detail? Because I think that sort of fandom point is a really interesting one.
Yeah, definitely. So Gen Zs are showing more of a fluid behavior when it comes to sports fandom. They're often more likely to follow particular athletes rather than a team or a game they happen to be playing. See the Messi effect as opposed to the Inter Miami or Barcelona. And conversations on sports also blend into other classic passion points in social media, those we're more familiar with, such as fashion, music, entertainment, and sometimes influencer and creator content. You see Taylor Swift and Super Bowl, there are memes and news all over social days after the match ended. And in the report, we interviewed Snapchat, and they shared how they found success with AR tools and how they engage casual fans with stickers, filters during the FIFA Women's World Cup last year. And social media also helps to level the playing field and allow smaller sports to engage and connect with users. There's this huge rise of conversation on TikTok around padel.
Padel? What's padel?
I want to say padel is an easier version of tennis, but the tennis fan might get offended by it. So it is rising sports. We see that there's just a padel stadium built around where I live. I want to say maybe that's inspired by the rising conversation online. So overall, this will be important for niche sports during the upcoming Summer Olympics in Paris, which TikTok recently announced to be the official partner of. We've got a clip from Rollo Goldstop, the UK head of sports and gaming at TikTok.
Ultimately, TikTok has the power to shine a light on lesser-known sports or the athletes who aren't typically recognised day-to-day. We want to drive both audiences and commercial opportunities during and well beyond the closing ceremony in Paris.
So I can see how brands would want to advertise around those communities on social media, but how do rights holders monetize this engagement? Because a lot of it's happening around the side.
Yeah, one of our interviewees, Callum McCauley, the senior manager of International Sports Partnership at Snap, told us that social media isn't replacing the importance of the live broadcast, but rather it's becoming the focus for everything else around it. So that's exactly what you just described. And for rights owners, social or digital platforms can definitely help them build this anticipation, the awareness before, and engagement after the match. So their emphasis is driving that casual fandom on social media platforms to live viewing, something we know that will be a big focus for the IOC during the upcoming Olympic summer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's talk about the Paris 2024 Games then. It is the biggest sports event of the year. Alex, I know you spoke to the International Olympic Committee for this report. What were the takeaways from that conversation?
It was really interesting, I must say. So we interviewed Jérôme Parmentier, who looks after all of the media rights and content partnerships for the IOC globally. And a full version, I should say, of the interview is available to read on walk.com. And I think one of the things that became quite quickly apparent from the conversation is that on the one hand, the Paris Games is going to provide a really fascinating window into some of the trends we've been talking about in this podcast already: evolving media consumption, the growing importance of social. But I think moreover, it's going to be a really useful health check on the Olympic brand itself and whether audiences in this part of the world and in America are still as interested as they were before.
That's a good point. The last three games have been in Asia, which hasn't always been the best for US audiences.
No, it's not been ideal at all. In fact, you have to go all the way back to the 2016 Summer Games in Rio for games of any variety, summer or winter, that have been held in a convenient time zone for US viewers. And as we outline in the report through one of our charts, while Asia is accounting for a larger share of broadcast fees and sponsorship revenue for the IOC than it did 8 years ago, the US is still absolutely the Olympics movement's most important market by far. You just have to look at the huge 10-year, $8 billion bet that NBC Universal has placed on the continuing value of the Olympics a couple of years ago. That will include the 2028 LA Games, of course. But nevertheless, you know, there are no guarantees. You know, it's been a lot has changed in that 8 years. That was a time before TikTok. It was a time before the SVOD explosion. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens.
Is the IOC concerned by the fragmentation trend we've been talking about?
I think there's a couple of answers to that question. In some senses, no, because for them, it actually that opportunities through mobile and streaming is going to provide them with more opportunities to showcase some of the smaller events that are going to struggle for airtime when you compare to your track and fields and your swimming, etc. For all of those modern pentathlon stands out there, they've had to struggle to find some of the footage in the past, but not anymore, because all broadcast partners are now obliged to stream all roughly 10,000 hours of content during the 17 days of competition. And where local provide, you know, so for the US, that obviously means Peacock, for NBC and Europe, Paramount Plus. Where some of the more maybe smaller local services don't have the equivalent SVOD or BVOD platform, the IOC says it can step in and provide alternative solutions. But either way, that sort of warehousing where footage has sort of just been kept on a hard drive somewhere but not used is now actually contractually forbidden.
So we'll be able to watch the new breakdancing category at the Paris Olympics.
Every last moment, yeah, you'll be able to practice them in your free time, David.
I look forward to the injury and muscle strain already.
That aside, I think that there is a bigger long-term challenge, though, for the IOC and for rights owners more broadly, is how to maintain revenues, to return to the point we started with, when their primary customers, these are TV companies, are having such a tough time.
So are we inching closer to a situation where a Netflix or an Amazon, someone with very deep pockets, buys the rights to the Olympics?
It's an intriguing prospect, but I'd say not as it stands, because at the moment, to be honest, it's not worth their while. So Amazon has been quite tactical in its acquisitions around sport, you know, live sport. There's been smaller packages, things like Premier League football, once or twice a season, you know, one game in a week in the NFL. Netflix most recently has been started dabbling with live content. I hasten to sort of, perhaps I shouldn't call it sport, but the WWE package that they have acquired. But look, neither of these companies, and this includes, you know, the likes of Apple and before we even talk about social media companies, they're not in a position yet where they'd want to spend $5 billion on the global rights to show the Olympic Games. The economics don't work. And to be blunt, they don't need to right now. I think what's interesting is the IOC is all too aware of this. It's all too aware that those companies deep as their pockets may be, don't really feel the need to sort of fill in. So that they want to find ways to help their broadcast partners to succeed. But you can't help but feel it is a tricky situation and that something will probably have to change. Either that's going to be new players entering the market to bid for sports rights en masse or at scale, or it's going to be old players finding better ways to monetize. So looking at that joint venture involving ESPN, Fox and Warner Brothers Discovery, we talked about, or, and this could happen, the rights fees will have to come down and that's going to challenge the whole economics around sport.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the way the Premier League has kept building off the back of ever rising sports rights, you know, it feels like the only way has been up for a very long time. But can that continue? At what point does that plateau or top out?
Yeah, I don't think it's an interesting point, and I think that's where we might see with future rights auctions, we might see a slightly more innovative approach to, we've seen some dabbling with smaller packages. Ultimately, at the moment, these rights holders like the Premier League, English Premier League, are trying to protect their broadcast partners. They won't be able to do that indefinitely because they've got bills they need to pay.
Thank you, Alex. And thank you, Celeste. Well, look, that's all the time we have for today. The Global Ad Trends Report on sports media in the era of fragmentation is available for Walk Media subscribers to read. Non-subscribers can download a free sample version. That's all for this episode of the Walk podcast. If you like what you've heard, then please do follow us on your favorite podcasting platform. And if you really liked it, please do leave us a review. Until next time, thanks for listening. Thank you.